All right. So hello, everybody, and welcome to our November 2019, a case study call for NEPT. These are the calls where you guys get to submit a case. Tell me about a client that you're working with. It could be yourself. It's always okay. Yourself or a family member or an actual client. You tell me all about them. There's a form you fill out that gives me all the great information. And then we go through it together. And there's Martha. So I'm looking forward to going through these. I think we learn a lot about these. And like I said, it's okay if it's your own case. I know there are other programs out there who say, oh, you can't submit your own case. You want to do that? Go join the client programs. But in reality, I find that it's an even better learning experience when you do submit your own case or somebody close to you in your family, because it's top of mind when I say, well, what about this? And what about that? You don't go, oh, well, I'm seeing them in 2 weeks. I'll ask them then, right? So this is as much of a learning process of what the next set of questions might be. So when you bring a case to it, it doesn't mean that I'm going to take you to full resolution on a case. It's like, let's figure out what the next steps might be, what other additional lab testing might be needed, what other questions you need to ask, because the power of questions is huge. And we get 90% of our information. You know, some people say 80 to 90% of the information we need for a case by how we interact with people, by how we connect and how we question them. And it's super important to know how to do that, because a lot of folks, when they don't know how to do that well, they'll just go lab, 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 lab. And there's a lot of functional medicine doctors out there that still have a kind of an allopathic approach where they'll go, okay, let's just run this test, this test, this test, and this test. And then you get all this information back and you're like, okay, now what? Right? Where do I start? So I prefer to preserve the client's pocketbook, right? And to, you know, preserve their budget, but also to order the right tests when we need it, not to delay delay the understanding of what really is going on, and thus delay how we put together an educational and, you know, a lifestyle protocol. I was going to say, I just want to give an example, and this is from Lynn. I hope she didn't mind me sharing it. She just shared with us at lunch today that she recently has a new client, and this new client has been to several practitioners over many, many years and is suffering from a GI type issue, and went to a naturopath, and she's going, whoops, what did the naturopath miss that I will not miss? And she found out that this guy is eating hot dogs. Like, this is part of his diet, and he has this gut problem, and he's eating hot dogs. And the naturopath didn't address that. The naturopath did some muscle testing and gave him some supplements to take. So this is why I spend so much time with you, you know, in the program and on these calls, teaching you to be that good detective. Like, eating hot dogs is not congruent with good gut health, is it? I mean, who here thinks that eating hot dogs is congruent with good gut health, right? So we don't really, you can't just assume just because this person's been to seemingly qualified practitioners that you won't have some additional insight, like, let's get you off the hot dogs as a starting point, and let's look at what other herbs and things can deal with Klebsiella and some other things that this person had. So we just have to use the process, right? The detective process that we go through on these calls. Okay. So, I don't know who submitted theirs first. I'm going to look. I think it was Isabel. Isabel's came in on the 3rd. And I mean, I'm going to look and make sure, and I'll do them in those order. As long as Patty is here. Let's see. Patty's came in on the 4th, right? Yeah.
And Isabel has to leave in about half hour.
Okay, so we'll start with Isabel. There we go. So Isabel's is up. I'm going to share my screen. And forgive me, I am not used to working on a laptop. So if I look kind of like I'm, you know, I don't have my extra thing to look at, my extra, what do you call it? Here we go. My extra screen to look at. I'm just kind of trying to deal with all of this on one screen. So I'm just not a laptop person. All right. So, this is, the one from Isabel. Can you guys see it? You see the screen? Isabel, are you there? Why don't you unmute yourself?
Yeah. Okay. So this is the case I've been presenting. It's my 7-year-old girl with autoimmune.
Okay.
So we just did, so she's on a vegan, anti-inflammatory, gluten-free, dairy-free, low-sugar, low-fat diet. So she's doing great physically. Like, she's not having any flare-ups of her symptom. So she was diagnosed with
dermatomyositis.
So that was December 2018. So she's doing great. She's making progress. And she's not having a lot of muscle wasting and aches and pains and rashes are gone away. But she's not gaining weight. So she's not gaining weight or gaining height. So that's for the last 6 months. And we just redid, I put her on an intestinal permeability test, leaky gut protocol, because she tested, she did the Vibrant, the test from Vibrant Wellness. And it was, there was leaky gut present. So we worked on the protocol for last 6 months. We just retested. Her leaky gut didn't get better. Okay. And at the time, 6 months ago, when we did the test, is she didn't have LPS, antibiotic elevated. Now she does.
Okay.
Now she does.
What do you interpret that as possibly meaning, that she has LPS?
I'm thinking she did move because we detected mold and we did a protocol with mold. She moved out of her environment, went into her grandma's environment. So we clear up mold. We did the mold testing, and then she doesn't have that present anymore. So, but her environment's changed. And gut, she does have gas. I was asking the dad, like, you know, when I first met her, her tummy looks hard and bloated. She wasn't comfortable after eating. Now she's fine, but still I asked him, you know, how does she go to the bathroom and how does she feel after she eats? She's like, she feels fine, except she farts a lot. It's like, okay, there's some kind of
dysbiosis, right? Mm-hmm. And there may have been a bug that, you know, sometimes not everything shows up on one test because there's a priority there in the LPS, there may be a flare up of, say, a candida, which will, mm-hmm. or any kind of organism. Did you do a stool test at the beginning?
No.
Okay.
A stool test. So, because she was doing better. I mean, she was doing better. So we didn't do a stool test right away.
Right.
And
right. Makes sense.
So environment change. I was going to ask her if she have any dental work or teeth cleaning, anything that's been done recently. And I was just on the call. Dr. O'Brien he has like a Tuesday call for people to ask questions. And he was on Facebook Live. So I put in question. And he talked about it briefly. He was talking about blood type O. So I don't know what her blood type is, but if he was mentioning, if someone who is blood type O and you put them on a vegan diet, that's
they may or may not thrive. Yeah.
Yeah.
And how much is she eating? That's the other issue, right? She was not eating a lot. I remember when she's not eating a lot.
I couldn't get his dad to put her food diary in the chronometer. I've been working on that for 2 months. So
that would be really good to know, right? Because then you see how many calories, how much protein is she actually getting? Mm-hmm. How is she getting in terms of her micronutrients?
Yeah, so protein, she's eating like vegetables, she's eating kale, spinach, broccoli, celery, carrots. Her diet's
clean, but it's limited. Right? But it may not be sufficient.
Not enough.
Right? If you're going to get, I get all my, you know, my protein from my vegetables, but you guys have seen me eat. I eat huge, huge plates of veggies, right? And I blend them and I get a lot of that. Mm-hmm. But she may not be. And proportionally, percentage-wise of protein that a growing child needs is very different than a postmenopausal woman. So, you know, percentage of her calories from protein. So she may need either, you know, to have some other sources of protein or to be doing some protein powder while she's getting.
She is on protein powder. So her protein level was low when we first started working. Now it's in the optimal range. Yeah. But she's still getting most of her protein from protein powder. It's besides vegetable. If she's, And she started doing some hemp seed. I've asked him to do a little bit of hemp seed. And he just started last week. I don't know if he started to do some bone broth with her. What else? She's not eating that much. I tried to introduce coconut butter for her because it's like sweet.
It's heavy. It's heavier. She's probably not eating enough. Which is why she wouldn't be growing. Her body is going to prioritize preserving what she's got, right? Yeah. Maintaining rather than growing. And at a child that age should be eating enough to be growing.
Yeah. And she, her rheumatologist, because she's still on medication, she's on prednisone, on IVIG. So the doctor attributed that to the medication is suppressing.
Yeah, I mean, prednisone is tough because it inhibits muscle growth, right? So you're not going to see that. And any of these medications could be interfering with her growth as well. Overall, she's getting healthier. So that's good, right? Her symptoms are better. It sounds like she does have some gut stuff, especially if the leaky gut markers didn't go away and the LPS is now there. Sounds like there's some sort of dysbiosis going on there.
So I couldn't understand, it wasn't there before, but now it's there. So what does that mean?
Yeah. And it could have been levels. It could have been that, I don't know what she's doing in terms of her good flora. Is she taking probiotics?
She is taking probiotic. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the only way you could know is to actually do a stool test and see, what the balance is there. But, I think that over time she would develop. So the test is actually measuring antibodies to LPS. Not the actual amount of LPS.
Yeah.
So as the gut is leaky and the LPS gets into the bloodstream, then the body's going to produce antibodies. So it just increases over time.
Okay.
Right. I think you need a headset there. Otherwise, just listen to me here. So you can see it go up, right, without any major lifestyle change. Or major exposure change, or just as the levels of the organisms are increasing,
right?
And then as the LPS creeps into the bloodstream through the gap junctions that are disrupted, then there's going to be an immune response, and the immune response will increase over time unless the amount of LPS goes down, because it could be the same amount of LPS being produced, could be, I'm not saying there is, and have a higher immune response over time, because more and more starts to leak into the bloodstream as the gut gets more and more damaged.
Okay.
So if you haven't addressed the gut, the particular organisms there, and she has some gut bloating, right? You initially saw some major stuff with very hard and bloated belly, and he said there's still gas. That's improved, but there's still gas. So there's probably some imbalance, and sometimes we could just fix that. We can just get them on a better diet and get them clean, and that stuff gets better. And sometimes we have to do a test and actually see to see what the specific balance of organisms are and how they do it. So I would recommend either the doctor's data comprehensive with parasitology, not just the parasitology, but the comprehensive. So you see her pancreatic elastase and you see inflammation.
Yeah, she's getting that done with her GI doctor. Her GI doctor is concerned about her weight. So they're getting that.
They're going to run that. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Good. And it could be a parasite eating all her calories.
She did stool test, the conventional stool test. They didn't find anything there.
Oh, those things are useless for finding parasites.
Yeah.
They may find a blatant, obvious case of Giardia, but they don't really find other more subtle parasitic stuff. And they don't always do a x3. And it's really important to do the x3. So really make sure that they do the x3 because they hide, and you want to make sure you get multiple days. And even then you can miss parasites.
Yeah. So what about that comparing to the GI map? That's a DNA. Right. Is that the GI map?
There's a lot of discussion about that these days. So you do that. The thing I don't like about the GI map is it's missing some of the markers that I do like. I don't remember which ones, but I remember looking at it going, where's the, some of the markers that I like. I think maybe short chain fatty acids, some of the inflammatory markers. I think it does have pancreatic elastase, if I'm not mistaken, but I've only looked at a few of those. So a lot of people love that test. It's certainly a good possibility, but make sure that they're doing, oh, that's the thing I don't like about it. They don't do sensitivities. Like, so for example, if we find a particular organism, I want them to do a sensitivity in vitro, right, is to see what's going to kill it. Because so many times we go, oh, let's just put them on this or that or the other thing, and they have a resistance to it, right? It's less likely in a seven-year-old because she hasn't been around the block as long as some of us, you know, and we've been took oregano and berberine and all the stuff, and suddenly we have all these organisms that are resistant to it. So that's the other thing I don't like about the GI map. I don't believe they do the sensitivity to it. Genova used to do the DNA, and then they got away from it. And I don't remember the history of why they got away from it. And now they're back to doing the culturing.
Okay.
But you know, it's, I don't think there's anything perfect.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. She's on L-glutamine, slippery elm, probiotics, vitamin D. So her vitamin D level actually increased fairly quickly. She was over 100. So I had her cut back
a little bit. Yep. Yeah.
And B12. Okay. And I know, I think you said B12 is not very accurate.
B12 serum, I don't trust, you know.
But it was increasing like every time she did the test.
So that means it's being absorbed. Is it sublingual that she's taking, or?
She's taking it's liquid. Yeah.
There's a new one, and I haven't researched it enough, but Matt Monarch was going on and on about this great version of B12 that it saved him from ulcerative colitis. He came back from it. But it's cultured with some probiotic organisms. And is it mattmonarch.com, Lynn? Yeah. If you go to mattmonarch.com, you can, you know, watch some of his videos and read about it. Okay. I like the guy. He's a really good guy, but he tends to be like, you know, one of those sensationalists. So everything is everything's the best thing in the world since sliced bread until it's not anymore, until he finds something else. But you saw a picture. I mean, he had gone down to like 86 pounds and was bleeding, you know, constantly bleeding from ulcerative colitis, and he was able to turn it around. So, and it's just a particular type of B12 that's with some specific organisms. So it's worth looking at. But it sounds like she's absorbing it because it's at least getting it, and the serum level is going up. I just don't trust, you know, if the serum level is low, I trust it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. If the serum level is high, it could be that their actual tissue level is low. And that's when I want to look at functional, you know, MMA and homocysteine and blah, 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 MCV.
Okay. Okay.
Right.
Yeah. Omega-3, slippery elm, liposomal curcumin, and liquid zinc.
Mm-hmm. So you're doing all that for...
For leaky gut. Yeah. Sounds like.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like it's a good protocol, but it's not exactly working, and it may not be working because it's not killing the bug.
Yeah. And what do you think about what Dr. Tom said about, like, if she's type O, then
that's all based on the, you know, the what's his name diet, you know, the blood type diet.
Yeah.
And is that, there's nothing, you know, okay. So you can't just use that. You can't just use blood type to say what person, whether they should be vegetarian or vegan or whatever. I just think it's part of the picture, and you want to look at it. And that I think that type O's do tend to need higher levels of protein. But what the public interprets that as is, oh, they can't be vegetarian or vegan. I know lots of healthy vegetarians and vegans. Is it the right diet for this particular girl at this particular time? I don't know, but look at what's happened with her. My concern would be, if someone has disrupted digestion and you give them, so they have a hard time digesting protein, and you give them a ton of animal products to digest it, then do they have enough stomach acid to actually do that? And do they still have to have more than usual because they need the stomach acid? And what are the repercussions of that?
Yeah.
You know, so I think that there's some great sources of, I would look at the collagen peptides type of thing, like the Sun Warrior or the Amazing Grass, to make sure she's getting the collagen support nutrients in there.
Okay.
You know, so whatever protein powder she's using, maybe check out that.
Yeah. Okay.
Now,
yeah.
Sometimes people have gas from pea protein. A lot of people don't do well with pea protein, and they get horrific gas from it. And make sure that nothing has erythritol or worse than erythritol. Erythritol's usually okay, but xylitol in it, because a lot of supplements and a lot of the protein powders actually put xylitol as a sweetener.
Okay.
So I would check those sorts of things, and that could contribute to the gas. But it does sound to me like there's a bug. There's something.
Okay. Yeah.
Whether it's, you know, mm-hmm. because she's eating a clean diet.
She's doesn't mean it's sufficient, though.
And that's where really sitting with him and communicating the importance of it. I know it's a pain. I don't like to do it either, but, you know, at least give me 3 days of diet where you put it into the chronometer, and it's easy to do. You just take it out. You have it on your phone. It becomes like a game. Once you've gotten one day in, it's real easy to put subsequent days when they're similar, because they show up in your favorites. So get them to do that, and then you'll be able to look at what actual nutrients, because sometimes people are on this really clean diet and I look and they're missing a whole lot of stuff because they're not real balanced. They're clean, but they're eating the same stuff over and over.
She's eating the same stuff over and over.
So she's probably missing certain nutrients.
Yeah.
And if they are nutrients that are required for growth, right, for growth and repair, then that's going to thwart her growth.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think that if the GI doc's going to do that, just if you can get them to verify that he's going to do a times three on the parasitology, because, you know, parasites are a common cause of stunted growth, right? The parasites eat all the good stuff.
Yeah. Well, they're not going to order the GI map or doctor's data type of stool test. They have, that's not going to cover by insurance.
If they're going to go like a Quest Lab stool test, I don't think you're going to get much good
information. Yeah, they didn't find anything.
Yeah, but what we want to see is good gut flora, commensals, and pathogenic in terms of bacteria. We want to see not just cultured growth of like a yeast, but what about microscopic yeast? I just had a stool test back from somebody. She had zero, you know, nothing that they could culture, but it was like abundant microscopic yeast. So she still had a yeast overgrowth problem. It wasn't any one species that they could isolate. And she had, you know, she's been in and out of the emergency room for the last month with, oh yeah, I think you have Giardia. Take this Giardia medication. Oh, you must have a resistant Giardia. Take it again. And she doesn't have any parasites, and they test a lot on doctor's data, but she has Klebsiella and Enterobacter and hemolytic strep.
Mm.
Right. And So you find those things out when you run that kind of a test, and then you can very specifically personalize the response to what's going on there. So that's a hard part if they're just going to do a Quest Labs parasite thing, you know?
Yeah, but I think he'll do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Good. He'll do the test. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So what you're saying about LPS, that it wasn't there before, was just the immune part of one of the reason, and maybe the immune system wasn't responding.
Yep. It could have been that the immune system wasn't responding. She has an autoimmune disease and her immune system is awfully busy over there.
It's suppressed. I mean, she was.
Oh, and she's on immune suppressants. Right. Yeah.
She is still on immune suppressant.
Yeah. That could be why it didn't show up. And if you didn't get rid of the bug and it keeps growing, it's going to produce more and more. Right.
Okay.
Okay. Cool. Good work on this. This is a tough case, girl.
Yeah. Well, at least she's feeling good. I mean, at least she's, you know, she's making improvement on, she's thriving, like, physically. She's not, that she's getting stronger, like her muscle is getting stronger, although the test doesn't show, but she physically could feel that she's getting better.
Well, all that stuff is good. And, you know, sometimes normal kids without autoimmune diseases, they go through growth spurts and then they plateau for a while and then they go through another one. I mean, it's not the norm. So there is definitely room for investigation, but, you know, especially with all that she's gone on and all the medication, that could be it. I mean, she's teeny tiny, 3'8" and 40 pounds.
Yeah, she was gaining like 2 pounds in 6 months, and her height didn't, she didn't grow, she didn't stretch taller at all.
Yeah. So you've got some good stuff to go on, and, you know, keep doing a lot of what you're doing and see if you can tailor it towards, you know, whatever bug's going on there. Now, if they don't do that test and they do just a regular old test again, then, I mean, you can certainly try something like a biocidin, which is, you know, kind of, it's strong, but it also general and broad spectrum, but be careful of doing it for too long because resistant bugs are real.
Yeah.
Right. And you don't want to create that. And because it has so many, I generally like to look at, well, if the test shows back with four, I'll put them on a rotation of 5 days on, 5 days off, you know, of the four and rotate it through, or at least 7 days for three. Yeah. Just keep them from creating that because I see it all the time. I see the berberine. I see the oregano are very commonly resistant in a lot of people. And then I'll see sometimes like grapefruit seed extract and silver because those are common ones that people just like, oh, take this. It has this in it.
Yeah.
And they're getting it.
I was talking to the Biocidin's support. I think that she was the founder. And I asked her about becoming resistant to biocidin. And she was talking about the flux pump because it works on the bacteria's dissolving the flux pump, efflux, I think that's the name of it. That's why that people don't become resistant to it.
I'd have to know more about that. Yeah. I know one of the things I will do usually before I put somebody on an antimicrobial protocol is at least 5 days to start, like before you even start the antimicrobials, is to start with some sort of biofilm breakdown product, or peptidase or something like that, and do that at least 5 days before starting and then continue that protocol while you're doing the antimicrobials. That way you're breaking open the biofilms and, you know, targeting and getting in there.
So the serapeptase, can you open the capsule or is it too strong?
I think it's probably too strong. I think, like, if you were to get something fatty like an avocado and open that up and, you know, put a little bit in there, the thing is, it's probably just going to break down whatever other protein is in the food. So you wouldn't really want to take it with a meal.
Okay.
But something like avocado, right, which is almost all fat.
Okay.
And it can wrap it. It might protect it.
Yeah.
And start with just tiny amount. Make sure she doesn't feel any burning sensation in her gut either.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. I haven't seen any of those in liquid. I've only seen them in capsules for that reason.
Yeah. Okay, thank
you. Thank you. All right, let me stop my share. Anybody have questions on that one? Oh, I see Julie came on and Christine came on. Kim, lots of people on tonight. Awesome. Okay, so chat. Anybody have questions about that or contributions to what we just talked about? Oops.
Yeah, I have a question. Dr. Avery, it's Angelica. So I kind of was going in and out there, but I heard that the leaky gut protocol didn't work for several months. Now, and I was just wondering this myself today, do you generally advise parasite cleanse prior to doing a leaky gut repair and why?
It depends. I'll usually do the little questionnaires to see what their scores are. If they appear to be high in leaky gut, the thing is that if there is, so it's one of those things that it depends, okay? So if they have leaky gut and they also have a dysbiosis, the risk you take is that, you know, because the gut is leaky, all the endotoxins, the LPS and other things are going to just get through and it's going to assault the immune system even more. But if they have this overgrowth and that's producing things that are causing the leaky gut, right? Like the LPS and other kinds of things that are damaging the gut lining, you're not going to get that far. So I'll usually do them together, right? And I may start one a few days before, depending on which one I think is higher priority, but I usually do start them together if I suspect both.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome. Good question. I'm looking. Julie is asking a question here. Okay. My mouse is not doing very well. What happened? It might have died. Maybe it died. Okay. I probably left it on by mistake. Okay. I'll use my little thingamajig. All right. Any other questions before we go on? I know you mentioned stress, and she's living with her grandmother, and there were some stressful things going on with her, and of course that, yeah, she definitely has had some stressors. Would you say, what is this one, Lynn?
Oh, you were talking about the,
Let me mute myself. Hang on. So I don't hear you. Double.
So you were talking about with the LPS and things that could help with decreasing it. And, because I have a client right now that, we're doing some similar things. I had been reading about ways to lower the LPS levels, and was just showing that prebiotics are good too, and the effect it can have on the bifidobacteria and things like that. I'm also, because, and this is the hot dog guy, by the way. So, along with working, cause he has chronic diarrhea. So along with working with that piece as well, I have been having him taking small doses of Cryptolepis to help with the Klebsiella. So I'm just offering that as something for consideration.
Yeah, so put my finger.
I don't know. Unmute. So what Cryptolepis is really tends to be good for Klebsiella, but we don't know what she's got going on. So especially since she's 7 years old, I'm really, really concerned about doing a shot in the dark approach to this, right? Cause she's small and she isn't growing and all that. But you know, that's the thing. Klebsiella, Cryptolepis is an antimicrobial that works great for some GI bugs, including Klebsiella. But, and most people are not going to be sensitive to it because most people never heard of it, nor can they pronounce it, nor are they going to find it easily. So it's a nice one to go on. One of my favorite books is, Herbal Antibiotics. And if you don't have a copy of Herbal Antibiotics and Herbal Antivirals by Stephen Booner, get it because it's just a really great, it's very specific. He goes through lots of research on, you know, if you have this particular bug in this particular area, some of the herbals that have been found to be useful are. And we don't want to do a this for that approach, obviously, right? So we want to clean up. We want to get rid of the hot dogs. We want to get them, you know, feeding his good bacteria, whether prebiotics, probiotics, et cetera. But it's nice to have that, especially when you have somebody who does a sensitivity and everything shows up resistant, right? And you're like, okay, what do I do? Well, let's try something that's not tested, right? And that's where sometimes the biocidin, because it has some things that they don't test for, and something like Cryptolepis, and there's a bunch of others that I learned about by reading those books. So thank you for that. All right, I'm going to put my... my microphone back on.
Yeah, Dr. Rita Marie, this is Eva. Yes. I just wanted to find out if mega, like bovine colostrum would be beneficial for this little girl because she's got autoimmune, but that also is shown to work with the LPS.
Yes.
Can I say something real quick to that?
Go for it.
So I had somebody recently who I had taking the bovine colostrum, and it actually really activated it, like they were having stomach cramps and everything. So we backed off of that, and we're doing liquid clay. So just something to consider. Because there's studies, too, showing that the colostrum can actually activate some of those bacteria and create that type of abdominal pain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, so it's really, whoops, where am I? Okay, am I open? Yeah. It's really important to look at what are our possibilities, but the proof is in the pudding, basically, right? We have to test things. And so this might be good for this person, but not for another person. This might be good because they have specific strains of something or their normal flora is intact and this other one doesn't have, you know, maybe their bifido is low and somebody else's bifido is high, et cetera, et cetera. So it's really a matter of taking the data, you know, and all the data we were discussing this earlier today, like you can look at, you can look at the lab tests, but also muscle testing and other kinds of things are important, but just taking one of those things out of context, you may not get the full picture. So I'm a big fan of looking at it as a comprehensive, and the stress is a big piece of it. And, 7-year-olds generally, if the stresses of 7-year-olds are, when there's academic pressure, when there's, sibling rivalry or a sibling that's, educationally challenged or behaviorally challenged and gets all the attention, or, mom and dad are fighting all the time, or they're divorced, or there's any number of things. And this little girl had the mold exposure too, which is huge, right? And then had to go leave her parents' house and live with her grandmother to get away from the mold exposure. And so there's a lot that goes on. And whenever there is autoimmune, we have to look at leaky gut. She has it. Stress, she has it. And then a genetic tendency, which she likely has. We don't have that, but most likely, because most kids 7 years old do not develop dermatomyositis as a result of stress and leaky gut. But when you have that third leg, she does, right? So we've got, the mold that they're dealing with, they're dealing with the stress, they're dealing with all the gut stuff. And it's a matter of trying. And if something doesn't work. So Eva, I think it's a great idea, because colostrum does support the gut and it supports the immune system. And again, going deeper with this, was she breastfed? Did she get colostrum when she was first born? A lot of them don't, right? They don't get the mom's colostrum. So they miss that piece of the immune system to support them. So these are all great questions, and it might work, but anytime you're going to introduce something, especially to a kid this small and sensitive, it's tiny, tiny amounts. So getting a powdered form and give her a little bit and see if it makes a difference, giving her a little bit, watching the gut symptoms, et cetera. So, but it's a good thing. Now, I don't know the vegan diet that they're doing. Is it because they are, religiously, ethically, committed to being on a vegan diet, or was it a switch because, they're from a health perspective? So if it's a switch from a health perspective, then they may be willing to add in things like, fish oils or colostrum or bone broth or any things like that, that could be supportive. But if they're doing it from a religious and ethical standpoint, it might be harder to get them to do some of those things. And then we want to look at others. Like I said, bone broth, sure, but maybe, the collagen proteins, the plant peptide collagens, the ones that support collagen production, could be just as effective. I don't know of anything else that, from a plant perspective, that would replace the colostrum if that did turn out to be what she needed. Fish oils is easy to, switch out to algae oils, et cetera. So it all depends on what that perspective is. Okay. Anything else before we move on? Ellen put in the link to the Matt Monarch probiotic thing. And then, okay, I think, glad you're here, Julie. I know it's been a while. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and share my screen for Patty's case. And wait, let me just answer. Mahala had a quick question. So let me just answer Mahala. I think she had a quick question. Let me look in there and find it.
I didn't.
Oh, you didn't have a question? Oh, yeah.
I submitted a question, yeah.
Yeah, I thought you did.
Yeah.
I forgot about it. How long should a person... Okay, this is a quick question. Okay.
Yeah.
How long... I'm on a tiny baby screen. I don't know how Lynn does this all the time. It drives me nuts. Okay, I had to open the thing up. How long can a person stay on high-dose iodine, 50 milligrams, or should a follow-up be a lab order if the results show improvement? How do you calculate what dose? That's a great idea. That's a great question. And we got to be careful if we're putting somebody on high-dose iodine, right? We don't want to create a problem. So if you've done an iodine load test and you see that their amounts are real low and you put them on the 50, I generally... I'm real cautious about it. I know Dr. Brownstein will go for months and months. I'm generally cautious about it. I'd want to look at a month later. I'd also want to know, does this person have Hashimoto's? Because high-dose iodine can increase that. So if they do and they have TPO, they've done TPO or antithyroglobulin, I would go back and do that before I would test iodine again, just to make sure that that wasn't triggering. So only do it for a few weeks to a month and then go, okay, Where's the TPO? Are they having symptoms that show that their thyroid's getting worse instead of better, right? Or are they improving? Sometimes when you put them on high dose iodine, it stimulates the release of bromine and other of the halides from the tissues, and they can actually feel worse, right? So when you look at the iodine load test, you want to look not just at the iodine portion, you want to look at the other halides. And if before they took the iodine load, they had, let's just say their bromine excretion was 2, and after they took the load of iodine, it was 4, then we know that there's a lot of bromine in the tissue that the iodine's pulling out. We have to be super careful and make sure that we deal with that with say vitamin C and other things to help support that. So I would say if they have Hashimoto's, if they've never had antibodies tested, you definitely should test it before you put them on 50 milligrams. And then you want to monitor to make sure it doesn't get worse. There's a whole bunch of iodophobia out there, which says that, oh yeah, nobody should take iodine. Like, oh, the thyroid needs iodine. If somebody's deficient in iodine, you can't say nobody should take it because it might trigger an autoimmune response. So it's a personalized approach that we need to be looking at, right? So I would say that before putting somebody on responding to an iodine load test and putting on that, I would want to check their thyroid antibodies before putting them on it, and then, you know, do it for a month and check it again. And if it's going in the wrong direction, then I'd want to back off. Sometimes this is something that Dr. Dennis Wilson says, and we have a call with him in the library, the ACR library, you may want to listen to, but he talks about how sometimes when you put somebody on iodine, they will actually get an increase in their TSH for a while.
Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah. So that's okay as long as you're monitoring it, because he said sometimes it happens and then it settles down because it's in the process of balancing.
Mm-hmm.
Does that help?
Yeah. Well, this patient actually did an iodine.
Iodine load?
Yes. And actually, it looks like there's iodine resistance. So, basically, when we did the preload, it showed that, well, before the preload, we checked the level was super low, then we loaded and then we did the collection and all the iodine was excreted as if there was enough.
As if there was too much. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that happens sometimes, and I've had discussions with the lab with that, and it does happen sometimes when there's a bromine or another halide toxicity mm-hmm. problem as well. And in that case, you're still – so I would look at that. So if I see something like that, then I look at the halides, and the halides are going up after that. Then I would proceed slowly. I wouldn't just put on 50 straight off. I would just proceed slowly at increasing it, see how they do, make sure we have them on a bromine detox kind of thing. You never want to take iodine and vitamin C together, just because they will interfere with each other. So you can take them in the same day. You just don't want to take them at the same time.
Yeah.
But you do want to take vitamin C when you're taking iodine just to help offset the symptoms of the bromine excretion, but just different times a day. Don't take them together. They will cancel each other out.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. All right. So the next one is, let me go to Patty's case. I'm going to share my screen again, but I have to do a different share. Where is my, okay, share. I'm going to share my email. Let me open it first. Hang on. Make sure I'm in the right place. I don't just see all my other emails. Okay. Here's Patty. Okay. So if I go to here. All right. Do you see my screen? Yes? Yeah, shake your heads.
It's working on it.
It's working on it? Okay. Sometimes it takes a little while. Sharing is being paused. What's that? Okay, resume share. Let me try that.
There you go.
Are you seeing my email with the Patty Shelley case? Okay, got it. Okay, good. So, Patty, make sure you unmute yourself so we can talk.
Here I am.
You are. Okay. Can you give us a little background? I see that this is a, 77-year-old, 5'4", 160 pounds, clearly overweight. three children, but probably grown and on their own. I'm guessing at 77. Yeah. I'm hoping at 77. Okay. All right. So, what's her main concern and what are you thinking about here?
Yes. Well, she was, initially diagnosed with lymphoma about a year ago, maybe it was the beginning of this year. And the reason I'm saying that is because I had typed all this information in and somehow when I did that into the case study thing, I lost it all. So I had to go back from memory by the end of the night. So I can't remember all the details. You'll hear me kind of stuttering because I'm like trying to remember all the details.
But you have a lot of it here. So
yeah, I had to go back into it because I lost it all. I had to go back in from the
okay.
memory.
So this is good though. I think it's good practice, even though you've typed it in, because I can fill in the detail, but a lot of times it's just a good idea to practice speaking about somebody's case so that it gets closer in your mind, because what you find is that you've read all their stuff and then you're like talking to them and you go, oh, I forgot about that, you know, yeah. because so much, right? So it helps when you're telling a case to say it out loud. So yes. Go for it. You tell us okay. what you know and then we can look at your notes for the rest.
Okay. In 2018, she was starting to have some problems. She had blood clots in the right leg. And then in May of 2000, let me see, I think it was May of 2019, which is this year, she said she was getting ready for bed at 11 o'clock and when we moved over and she felt the zing and she was pretty much paralyzed and she was in the hospital for a couple of days. They gave her morphine and then the second she didn't like the morphine, so they gave her she called it super Tylenol.
She was turning over in bed and she felt a zing and then she was paralyzed.
That's what she said. She couldn't move. So they had to call 911 and they had to stretch her out. Yeah. So there's an unknown cause. She said she was there from, she went in on a Saturday night, happened around 11 o'clock, at night. And, she said they started giving her morphine on early Sunday morning. And then that night they gave her super Tylenol and then by Tuesday, they let her go.
So she was, how long did it take for her ability to move to come back?
She said it felt like probably about 24 hours.
Okay. So that was the paralysis as a result? Sometimes people go, I can't move because if I move, it's going to hurt.
Yeah.
Right. Was it that or was she like physically her brain and her limbs weren't speaking?
Yeah. She told me she couldn't move at all. So is what she said. She couldn't move it out. She goes, that was very scary. She's never had anything like that. She's a very chill. She's a very relaxed woman. I've known her for a long time. So she said since that point, again, lymphoma was diagnosed, I want to say, either the early part of this year or part of 2018 okay. into this year.
So close to a year ago.
Yes. And, okay. But then she told me, when we talked on the phone Monday, she said that the biggest concern was she's got this huge 3/4-inch black mole on her back. And she said, it's really, really painful. So she said she's got pain now around her rib cage, which, has been there for several months since May of this year. And she said, the only way she can get rid of that pain is by slouching in her lazy boy chair and moving around. And she said, that's the only way the pain will go away. So sometimes she has to sleep up in her lazy boy chair because she's always in pain. Then she said just recently, she's got this black mole that's on her back and is causing her, it even has even more pain. She said the rib cage, she told me, she said it's hurt, not pain, which she tried to describe to me. She said, it's just kind of like when you get a bruise.
Okay.
And so I said, well, I wonder if that was more of a musculoskeletal kind of an issue.
Yeah.
And then she said now she's got some sort of weird, she called it a pimple in her vulva area. And she said, now I'm getting all these weird kind of things that I've never had before. Again, the lymphoma, the doctor, the last time she talked to the doctor, he said that the lymphoma isn't going to kill you. It's bacteria that's going to kill you. And she didn't really ask questions. And I said, well, can you tell me a little bit more? What did he mean by that bacteria is going to kill you? What has he found? What kind of bacteria? And she said, all he said to her was that he wants her to get three shots. He wants her to get the pneumonia shot. She actually did end up getting the pneumonia one. What's the one from, I'm all of a sudden, I'm drawing blank now.
So there's the flu shot. There's the pneumonia shot. There's
shingles.
Shingles.
measles, and it was a flu shot. So she said no to the flu. She said no to the shingles, but she did get the pneumonia shot because she had contracted pneumonia, she said, in February of this year, too. So she said she wanted to protect herself because he just kind of, he made her feel like she needed to do it. So she went ahead and got the pneumonia one, but declined the other two.
So with this lymphoma, did he say Hodgkin's lymphoma, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma? I mean, lymphoma is typically a pretty serious thing. That can kill somebody within months of it. Like my sister died within 3 months of being diagnosed with lymphoma at 44, not 77. So, you know, it's like, what kind of lymphoma is this?
Exactly.
And what is he proposing?
Yeah. The interesting thing, he just said it's a slow, if she was going to have any kind of cancer, this was the best one to have. It was slow growing. And I said, well, no cancer is good to have.
But some said, are more aggressive than others.
Right.
But the thing is, right, lymphoma, you know, the immune system's involved, and going in there and dealing with vaccines is, you know, kind of risky when somebody has an immune system problem. So anyway, we won't have a philosophical discussion about that, but has she had this mole on her back, this 3/8 of an inch, if it wasn't seen the last time she was in, when she went in with this paralysis, if it's new and it's gotten that big, it's something that needs to be looked at. So if she hasn't had that looked at, she needs to have it looked at. Because moles are usually slow growing. They're there over years. And it could be that she went in because she went in for something else. They didn't bother looking at, you know what I mean?
Right.
Very common, right? But it is something she needs to get looked at. You want to make sure that that's not a malignant melanoma.
Right.
And that'll be the thing that kills her.
Exactly.
Than anything else, right? So, yeah.
She's supposed to go next week for that. So,
okay. So what is she asking you for help with?
She's wanting help. Well, because first of all, the lymphoma and this unknown quote unquote bacteria that this doctor, the doctor said he's more concerned about her dying from bacteria than he is from lymphoma. So I said, well, first of all, you know, did he address why did you get lymphoma? And so what I did was, I had her giving me, from 2017 to now, 2017. So 3 years worth of blood work because, and as I went through it, I don't know, I'll do it this way. I don't know if you can see, but I went today and I just took everything out and I kind of did map roadmaps because I didn't even know what I was doing. I thought, well, I got to look at all these different numbers.
Yeah. Well, you know, we have the Master Health Tracker. You can put them in.
I guess I have to work on that one.
We'll have to find that for it. I'll show it to you. Because that would help you a lot with that.
Okay,
but good. I'm going to say to you, great job on deciding to map that out for yourself, right? Because it's the only way you can really tell is to map things out over time and see what's changed and what hasn't, you know?
That's correct.
Yeah, so that's a good idea that you did it, and we'll show you an easier way to do it.
She's never, you know, never questioned the doctor and never really understood what was going on in her lab work. So I said, would you be willing to allow me to look at it since this is what I'm doing for her? And, you know, I said, I'm learning how to do this and I would love to help you. And again, my mission is because I've already had, two people that I've loved, you know, die because of some misinterpretation of blood lab work and just things that were missed and they didn't know how to ask the questions. And so, you know, I'm here to try to help her because she asked me if I could help her to come up with some good questions in order to ask him, you know, why am I still feeling like this? You know, why do I have this pain? And she's got a great attitude.
That's awesome.
And so, you know, I met her, she's a pet therapist. And so she's always had dogs around her. The dogs sleep with her. And I was thinking, well, maybe her posture because the dogs sleep with her, maybe the, you know, maybe that was sort of the thing.
You know what? I just want to say to you, you're asking good questions, right? You're thinking things in a way that, oh, maybe it's this, maybe it's that, which is awesome. So good job.
Oh, thank you. Yes. So I didn't know quite where to go from there, but I was looking at all of her and I said, and she was sharing with me some things. And when she first started telling me, I said, well, what do you see on your lab work? And she said, oh, well, they just said that there was a lot of highs. She had a lot of high numbers in all her different labs. And so I can't I think I downloaded some. Some I couldn't get to print off for you. I was trying to download them and they wouldn't go in. So I didn't know if this would
be. Oh, I see. You put them in here.
Yeah, I put some in there and then I got some more she sent me today because she forgot to send me the 2019. So it was a kind of late and I tried to send them in there and it kept pushing me out. So I don't have the 2019 in there.
I'm just taking a quick look at the things that are high. She's got some sort of anemia. She's got some sort of some sort of thyroid, something going on, possibly kidney. She's got high creatinine and high creatinine over and over again.
Yeah, she does.
Low GFR, glomerular filtration rate, which is kidney. So there's something going on with her kidney. What's that?
Oh, I didn't say anything yet.
Oh, yeah. So we're looking at, Lynn is looking ahead at her diet, right? So
yeah.
first, right? So, you know, one thing is she okay with you being an advocate and are you willing to like go to an appointment with her so you could help her ask these questions? People at this age who have not ever, you know, had an advocate or know much about their health can be really abused at the doctor. I mean, I don't mean it badly. I just mean, well, I do mean it badly, but I don't mean it like to insult the doctor. It's just not their method, right? And so they're doing what they think is the right thing, but they're missing a whole lot of stuff. And they're just like, yeah, dear. You know, they're very undermining to people when they start to speak up, especially somebody in their late 70s, right? They're going to just, oh, dear, just trust me, dear. Just trust me, dear. That, you know, they get very,
condescending.
Condescending, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it would be helpful. You know, I think you and I talked about that at one point about one of those calls was the advocate thing, that people really need that advocate.
She's in Orlando, so I wouldn't be able to go with her.
Oh, she's in
Orlando, Florida. Yeah.
Okay. So she's not. Yeah. So helping her with the questions is number one, a really great thing. But look at this, right? So we're looking. She swims. Great. She washes the cars every once in a while. That's kind of cool. She does the stuff with the walk, you know, with the dogs. So she has a lot of good exercise. She has a lot of good camaraderie with the dogs. But she's drinking, you know, coffee and Coke and Hershey bars, ice cream. So you can start with her and say, look, you know, we're going to dig deep with this, but the causes of cancer are a lot of the things you're eating in your diet. So let's just eliminate some of these things and help her to make substitutions. Great handout that we have in the program is it was actually one of the Shine handouts, was the swap log, the swap list. Lynn and I spent days working on that before one of our conferences. And it's a really awesome document. And it helps them to go good, better, best choices. If they're trying to get rid of this, what are some good, better, best? And so you just help her to ease in. But you tell her, look, you've got lymphoma. What I tell people is, okay, you've got this, whatever, arthritis in your knees and your knees hurt. If you want to go slow with the dietary changes, the pain is going to be there longer. If you've got something like cancer, going slow is not a good idea, right? Or if you've got some serious bacterial infection, going slow is not a good idea. So if he's concerned about the bacteria, she's feeding the bacteria, right? She's feeding it with the sugar. Right. If we definitely know there's lymphoma there, we're feeding it with the diet. So really having that heart to heart with her and saying, congratulations on all the awesome exercise you're doing. This is awesome. Congratulations on having the pet sleep with you because that's just such a great stress, you know, relief thing. Now let's work on your diet. Are you open to working on your diet? Because we've discovered, science has discovered there is a certain diet, type that predisposes to cancer, and there's a certain diet that helps with, you know, restoring balance so that the cancer, we make it an inhospitable environment for the cancer, right? Especially if it's slow growing. Who knows what he means by slow growing? They do tend to be condescending, you know, it won't kill you for 3 years. You'll be 80 then, you'll be old, so what? You know what I mean? That could be the thought process. Mm-hmm. Not that they would say that, but that a lot of times is the thought process. You're old. We're not going to make you change your diet. But huge changes, huge salvations can happen when you really approach that. So I would approach her with that. Looking at the, I'm going to show you where to put these so you get to see, but I'm looking at what I see here. The main thing, I don't see a CBC. So hard to tell if she's been having immune stress for a long time. And I don't see liver enzymes, right? Because the liver is so key in detoxification. And detoxification is so key for the immune system and for helping to, you know, stop the growth of cancer. So those are things that I would want to look at. But let me show you, because I think I'll just switch the share. Share here. All right, I'm going to show you. Okay, got to get that open. My sites. I hope it works. My computer would not, my mainframe at home would not, for whatever reason, access our website. It was driving me nutty. Okay, log in. I think that might not be the right password though. Okay. Okay. All right, now we'll get the right password. Again. And we had to get I'll show you where you can pick some recordings of the orientations where Lynn is just like, she knows the site like the back of her hand and goes through and shows you everything in it. So I'm going to show you where to find those. But first I'm going to show you where to find this master tracker. So if you see where it says resources, can you see on my screen where it says resources? Oh, it's,
there's nothing on the screen.
Oh, it's paused. Why is it doing that again? Okay. All right. I don't know why it does that. All right. Now you see it?
Yes.
All right. So you see across the top where it says resources, it's a little, just slightly before halfway. Yes. When you click resources and you go down, do you see NEP? Is it? Yeah.
NEPT, yes.
NEPT resources. And then under that list, you can't do this without a mouse.
Oh, it's hard to do.
Okay, hard to do without a mouse. Okay, there. Why is that not showing?
There should be a
sidebar. There it is, a sidebar. All right. Aha! It keeps going away. Anyway, one of those things says
Master Tracker.
Master Tracker. You see it?
I did see it, yeah.
I'm going to try opening it. Master Health Tracker. What you want to do with this is one of two things. My top recommendation is that you copy this to your own Google Drive. If you don't have a Google Drive, start one, because it's really, really helpful to have stuff on a Google Drive. So this is going to be the Master Tracker, recently updated, by the way. We have an index over here of all the different places in it. And if you go down to Lab Results US, or there's also an international for those of you who live in Canada or other countries. Unable to load the file. What? It's there. It just showed it. Why did it say unable to load the file? All right. So see this? This is a template you will not be able to write in this. I can, so I'm not going to mess it up by doing anything in it. But what you do is either you do file, see where it says make a copy? You say make a copy, and you just put it on your drive. It'll give you a choice here, folder. I'm on mine, but everybody has on their Google Drive a place where it says my drive. I have just a lot of files. See where it says my drive?
Yes.
Yeah, just put it on your drive, and then put her name in. Well, first I would just make one copy and just say, you know, Patty's Master Health Tracker template. And then I would make a copy of that copy and make it for this particular client. And then you can make one for all your clients. You see?
Okay, I'll practice with that.
And there's a lot of other stuff in here, but for today we'll just show you this. But you put it. So you put the date up at the top here. And then so if you have three different dates, you put them in. And then you put her glucose and you put all her other numbers in. And then you can see what's happening. But here's the cool part about this. I will put something in and I'll take it out. Like she had 103 for one of her glucoses. Now look at what's going to show. It's going to change color in the cell. And it'll take a couple of seconds the first time it's calculating. And it doesn't like to be watched, so it goes slower. So 103, the cell turns yellow. Had see these ranges? Lab range and ideal range?
Okay,
the lab's only flagging it if it's outside the lab range. And the lab ranges, you've heard me speak about this on at Shine and in other places, it's just not appropriate, right? So we're looking for them to be in the ideal range. So she's out of the ideal range, but she's still within the lab range. So she's yellow, you know, so she's in an insulin resistant state. Had I put in 125, right, now she's orange, right? So now she's in a diabetic range. So it will tell you based on, I'm just going to delete that. It'll tell you based on this, whether they're really high. Let me take that one out. Okay. Does that make sense?
I think so. Yes.
So just go in and exactly what you did on your piece of paper with your charts, just do the dates across and then put all of her numbers down, and everything that you did will be on here. Okay. And a whole lot more, of course. What I would be wanting to see for someone who's been diagnosed with lymphoma, they generally are going to diagnose it from an elevated white blood cell count. Right?
Yeah, it was interesting because I was looking for that now. I'm still learning all these things, so I'm a little embarrassed. But
No need to be embarrassed. You're learning, right? This is a great way to learn. Yeah.
She had the MCH and the RDW, right? The RDW.
The RDW is high.
Yeah, so I think I have the MCH with her and the RDW for you. I showed that.
Yeah, but that's just a minimal. What we really want to see is the blood cell counts, the red and the white blood cell counts. These are good. The RDW gives us an idea. Is there some sort of anemia? Hers was, 15 or 17? So it is. It's outside the range. MCH, and I'm surprised they didn't do MCV. They did MCH because MCH is calculated. But what was her number on that one?
For which one?
The MCH.
MCH was 33. Well, there was 33.3. It stayed around pretty much 33.3.
Yeah, so it's high. But that's not telling us a lot. So you're saying you may have had other things on your list, but you didn't put them on the sheet.
Yeah, because I wasn't quite sure what was important.
What was important?
I did was I went through all of her sheets and everything that had a high or a low.
Got
it. Put them on here, and then I kind of looked at an average. I kind of looked at them from 2017 to 2019, and for an example, one of my questions was that absolute lymphocytes and monocytes.
Yeah.
The lymphocytes went from in 2017 at 3719. In 2018, it went to 4628. In 2019, it's 6,385.
Yeah. So what you want to look at, the absolute numbers are going to vary based on their total white blood cell count. So you must have a white blood cell count, and probably the white blood cell count is going up.
Okay.
Right. And it may still be, I think, is in a good range. I would want to know, how did they diagnose the lymphoma? What did they do? What tests did they do to diagnose the lymphoma? Okay.
And I think she told me it was, they just did blood work. They said it was just her blood work, because she said she never felt anything. She never felt sick. And she said she just went into, you know, to get blood tests. And they said, oh, by the way, you've got cancer. And she said, I do. So she was really, you know, it surprised her, because she said she never had any bleeding or anything that would have demonstrated any type of.
I want to see what the blood tests were. So I would want her to ask, give me the copies of my blood tests and show me what tests you did that said I had lymphoma.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. And then she never had, this year was the first time she ever had her vitamin D tested, by the way.
And what was it?
And the 24.
Oh God. Yeah. Yeah. So
she says, well, I didn't think, she said, you know, I'm always out in the sun. I'm in Florida. And I said, well,
it's 24. No,
that way.
No. So, you know, so you've got some things you can help her with right away, right? The diet stuff and getting that vitamin D up.
Yes. And so what would you might recommend for, because she's got a history of blood clots and because she's got the lymphoma, and like you said, we see some anemia going on. what supplements can you think is okay? Because she doesn't take any medications. And so that's what she told me. Now, I don't know if she takes Tylenol. I'll have to just get clarified. But can she, would you recommend the B12, the magnesium, the omegas?
I don't know enough to recommend. I mean, certainly omega-3s, you got to get those, you know, from the diet. But also omega-3s are certainly fine. Vitamin C in a cancer situation is probably fine. And not knowing a full picture, it's hard to say exactly what nutrients she needs. She needs a diet overhaul.
Yes, diet overhaul, yes.
Right. She needs lots of green leafy vegetables, orange-colored vegetables, red-colored vegetables, all the whole rainbow of vegetables to get her antioxidants.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I want to see her liver enzyme status to see if there's some stuff you want to do to support liver. There's an immune system module on the client side of the program. So if you click on Unstoppable Health, let's just see if I can do this screen sharing. Pause. Let me go resume share. And if we go here and I go back to the site, where is it? Oh, I think I have to go backwards this way. Okay. So if we go back on the site and you go off to the left, the right-hand side, down here where it says Unstoppable Health Programs.
Yes.
Okay, click on that. There's some good stuff in there that you can actually use as handouts because you don't have access to the immune module in NEPT yet. You have to kind of work your way up to it, but you can have access to it here. So you would get in here and you would scroll. Where would we find it? Is it MU? Okay, so here we go. Immune Enhanced Lifestyle. See this one? Scientific and Holistic Immune Enhanced. Okay, so you click on that one.
Oh, is it Shield?
Shield, yep.
Shield, okay.
Yeah, Shield. And then you would scroll down and there's probably assessments. You can look at some of those things. Herbs and foods for fighting infectious diseases, strategies for calming the fires of inflammation and autoimmune disease, managing allergies. This is where I would probably look, but I'm sure there's some paper. I don't remember which section, but there's some things like, you can watch my videos, whatever you want to do in here. There's autoimmune, create a plan, incorporate immune system balancing habits, right? So this is guide. The looking at her omega-3-6 ratios. So here we go. You know, there's various things in here that you can look at. Let's see. And an oil change is a great thing for any kind of, right, inflammatory, what foods, what, you know, supplements, et cetera. Obviously the vitamin C, vitamin D, strategies for managing pain and inflammation using diet. And then there might have been, I don't remember which section there might have been. Maybe it's in extras. Let's see. Bonus eat rate of pain. No. This was managing allergies. This was inflammation. Let's see. It might be just in the beginning.
Okay.
You know, just immune supporting nutrients and immune depleting nutrients. That's the first one. Part one, maybe. Assess the state of the immune system, determine oxidative stress, complete immune system testing, order lab tests. No, so it wouldn't be in there. One of these sections has the foods and herbs that you would look at to support immune system.
And you said that this is something I would share with her, like I could do a handout for her or talk her through
you
it,
can,
or...
Yeah, you can go through some of these presentations and just create her something simple. But the other thing is that food swap list is really helpful. And you can just give her, you know, print that out or send it to her or does she use computer? I mean, I know a lot of folks.
A little.
So you may want to print it out, circle the things and then mail it to her because it's probably going to make it easier on her. But the ones that you think are important. So go through the swap list and not like tell her she has to do everything in the swap list, but circle the ones you think are the top three that she should start with, right? Getting rid of the sugar, getting rid of the what else was she eating? The M&Ms or the Hershey bars and that's.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Would you, Yeah, when would you recommend, since like when we did the insulin resistance program, the sweet spot,
yeah,
would you recommend her being on those chromium and the three that you had recommended to help her through her cravings since she's...
Yeah,
she's
I mean, those can be very helpful, and she also has elevated blood glucose, so...
Yeah, her, yeah. And like you said, the thyroid was really high. She definitely has thyroid...
Yeah, let's not jump into that. We start with the building blocks. We start with the pillars, right? And if you, let me go back into that. Let me share again. I unshared. I will reshare. Let me share again. Share. Here we go. Let me go back to, is it sharing now or is it not? Did it start to share again or did it?
No.
I don't know what happened here. Okay, go here. All right, there we go. So if I hit share again and I hit that, I say share. Now, it keeps popping out. I hit share, it goes to share. Let me see. Let me try this again. Share. Something screwy. It's not letting me share. But back on the main site, on the right hand side again, there's the body freedom pillars.
Okay. Yeah. Yes.
And in there, there's a ton of great stuff and handouts and things in the nutrition piece. There's a ton of stuff in there that you can use to try to teach her some new habits and teach her some of these things. But vitamin C can be vitamin C, D, and omega 3s can be super important at this point.
And then, of course, like you said, the ones that we would the chromium that would be okay.
Yeah, I mean, you can you just don't want to overload her.
Yeah, that's
right?
What I was wondering. Yeah, we'll probably
don't want to overload her, but you know, we'll get her on the metabolic reset diet.
Okay, and would B12 is should we put her at? I guess what I'm looking. Do I should we?
Well,
just do
I mean, there, with
food?
The MC, I'd want to see the MCV. A homocysteine, B12, is likely that she has an issue with it, but I didn't see enough there. So look at her MCV. MCH is a little on the high side, but again, that's calculated, but look and see if there's an MCV there. Fill in her sheet, get her on the basics first.
Basics first. Okay.
And then fill in the tracker and then bring it to another call.
Okay. Yeah, put her in the basics first. Yeah, that sounds good. And I have one other question. She did do a urinalysis, and I want you, if I was going to ask for your help, what is a leukocyte esterase? It was a 1+.
Yeah, so she's got white blood cells in her urine.
Okay.
So she may have a bladder infection as well, or a low-grade bladder infection.
Okay, and that was in 2000. And then also this, okay, so this one was, it looks like Kielbasa, but it's not.
Oh, that was old? So that was older?
Yeah, 2018 was
so, 1+. So bladder infections come and go. She maybe, you'd ask her a question like, do you tend to get bladder infections? Do you ever find yourself feeling urgency and burning and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, she had pelvic reconstruction done. And since that, things seemed to tumble after she had bladder reconstruction.
Yeah.
And then this one was K-L-E-B-S-I-E-L-L. Yeah, okay, pneumonia. And she had that. It said 10,000 to 50,000 CFUs.
And that was in the urine analysis?
Yes, 2019.
So they cultured it when she probably had the high leukocytes and they cultured it and got that. Because that's normally not going to be tested for unless they culture the urine with the suspicion. Did they put her on antibiotics at that point?
You know what? She didn't say. She said she only had antibiotics when she was on pneumonia, when she had pneumonia this year. So that's a question I'm going to have to ask.
Klebsiella pneumoniae, that's in her urine as well. So, yeah, I would ask her that. It may have been around the same time. But it sounds like she had a bladder infection.
Okay. That's what I'll let her, because she doesn't know what those were, and I didn't either. So I said, I better ask her.
It sounds like they cultured her urine. When she had the high leukocytes, they cultured the urine and discovered that she had the Klebsiella.
Okay.
That book I was telling you about, too, great resource for that sort of stuff. Great resource. Somebody, the herbal antibiotics. Because you can look up the Klebsiella, that's particular species of Klebsiella, the specific place in the body, and it'll talk about various herbal and, you know, kind of approaches to dealing with that.
Okay.
Thank you. So that'd be a good thing to start looking at. Okay. You're jumping right in, girl. It's cool. Tough one.
It's taking me a long time.
Good. It will. The first times it will. And yes. He is my little son. Hi. Yeah. Yeah. Good job. Really. Really.
All right.
Yeah. So use that. Get used to using the Master Help Tracker. You really enjoy using it because it just helps you to see over time and to see the good ranges, the ideal ranges and the lab ranges, which are very different in a lot of cases.
Okay. And so just have her just bring a few questions to her doctor. And I told her that she may want to probably look to another doctor. As you have said, I was watching one of your videos and we were talking about how sometimes conventional doctors would have issues bringing questions and should I recommend her if that doctor doesn't want to work with her for a functional doctor?
I would wait. Okay. So a lot of times we just have to move slowly with moving in into territory with people. You don't want to alienate her or have her alienate her doctor. So don't even put those things. Here's some questions that are really important for, you know, you to know. You deserve to know these things because it's your body, right? And that's going to help you to make decisions moving forward.
Okay.
And then if after that, if she comes back and said, yeah, my doctor said this and that and the other thing, then you don't have to put that doubt in her mind that she has the wrong doctor or that stress in her.
Yeah.
Oh my God,
yeah.
New doctor I've been seeing, right? Don't even go there until, you know, if you hit a roadblock and then you can say, well, you know, you do have a choice of finding a different doctor that can help you with this, you know.
Very good.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you for your time today.
You are very welcome. Thank you for submitting your case. All right. So is there anything else in the chat? I'm trying really hard to be able to do this without my mouth. Okay. So we did that one already. You're taking a digestive enzyme with a lot of vegetables or a lot of cellulose. Okay. That was back with her. Let's see. Drug resistant. Let's see. All right. So what was that? Guest faculty. Oh, Dr. Wilson. We talked about that. Thank you, Lynn. She on chemo. Doesn't sound like she's on chemo. Sugar feeds cancer. Absolutely. Food swaps. Lynn, put the food swaps in there, Patty.
Okay.
So go back through chemo side effects will kill faster than the cancer. I agree, Mihaela. Spoken from our naturopathic pharmacist, conventional pharmacist. So anybody has questions about drugs, and if you hear Mihaela saying anything negative about drugs, she knows because that's what her training is. So she's really good at, and she's going to be creating a program soon on alternatives, right? How to help people to look at. So she'll have a program available that we can actually get our people through that will help them to see the interactions between their various medications and various medications and their drugs. And it's a time consuming process if you don't have the background that Mihaela has. So I'm looking forward to sending my people to take her program. You know, when I see somebody coming in on polypharmacy, they're on five drugs and you're like, I don't have time to research this. I'm going to send them to Mihaela. So, Okay, Patty, I'm impressed. Yeah, so this is from Angelica. Patty, I'm so impressed you're jumping into the deep end and helping this guy. And even though you're new to the program, you're truly inspiring. Using the Master Host Travel is a great way. So, yay. Okay, cool. Any other questions or comments before we call it a night?
I have a question.
Sure.
So what do you do if the RBC magnesium is high? How do you handle that?
I was reading about that the other day. Like we always think of magnesium, but it can throw off other things when it's high. So what do you do? Well, first thing I do is ask them, are they taking magnesium? Right? If they are, I would lower their dose.
Well, the problem is that there's magnesium in probably 80-90% of supplements because of the magnesium stearate.
I don't really count that.
You think it won't affect it?
I don't really. I doubt it. I doubt it.
The doses are small, for sure.
Very tiny. You know, it's an excipient. It's very tiny. The stearic acid makes, that's the reason I don't like that, because the stearic acid interferes with the absorption. So I wouldn't count that. Did you see the newest piece we have added to the Master Tracker? I'm going to show everybody this because I'm loving it. Share, and you will too. Okay, let's see if I can actually share. I'm going to go in here and see if it'll share. If not, I'll close. Nope, it's not. So I'm going to close that window and I'm going to see if I open up my sites. I may have to just close the whole Chrome window down, but I will. We have this new thing in there in a new sheet where you can put in their amounts in various supplements and it'll add it all up for you and it'll tell you how much all they have with all their supplements combined. Okay, so if I go here. Where is that Master Health Tracker again? I'm going to open up the Master Health Tracker again. And I think I closed it. Resources. Master Health Tracker. Okay. If this doesn't work. It's waiting. All right. If this doesn't work with the share, then I'll close down my Chrome and I'll open up a new window. Master Health Tracker. Okay. So if I go here. And click it, and now I go to back to Zoom. Sorry, I talk to myself when I don't want to get lost. All right, there we go. Yay, it shared. Must have been something in that thing. Okay, so this is the Master Health Tracker. There's this thing called supplement tracking. Do you see this here? Supplement tracking. Now, you can go from this index, or you can go across here. It's paused again. What is going on tonight? Resume share. Cuckoo. Okay, so you can find all of the sheets in here by scrolling that little, the four lines at the beginning, and you'll see all the sheets. I always find it just a little quicker to go here, and then it'll open up the link, and you click it. And this supplement tracker, have you seen this, Mihaela? This is relatively new. And what you do is you put the person's supplements across the top. So say they're taking, you know, company X, whatever, and it has a certain amount of riboflavin, a certain amount of whatever, and you just put it down here. So I'll just type it in and I'll have to exit. I'll take it out afterwards. So you'll put in Seeking Health B complex. And then you just look at the bottle and you see, oh, it has, you know, 50 milligrams of thiamine and, enter, 50 milligrams of riboflavin and 100 milligrams of niacin, et cetera, et cetera. So you put them down. And then you go ahead and you put, they're also taking Rainbow Light Multi. And you do the same thing, but it may have some, you know, 5,000 of retinol palmitate. Maybe it has 10,000 of beta carotene, but it also has 20 milligrams of riboflavin and 10 of, or of thiamine riboflavin, you know, and 50. Okay. Look what happens over here on the left. You get a cumulative. Is that cool? Tell me this is cool. I love this. I love this. And then we can go all across and put all their supplements across the top. You just put down the box here. If the supplement contains anything we don't have listed, then you can add it to the other ingredients. Like we put a few. Whoops. Okay. Yeah, we put a few, but just add them. Whatever else they have. Maybe they have some amino acids. You put those down, et cetera, et cetera. And you've got this accumulation of everything they've got. So you may think they're just taking 500 milligrams of magnesium, but when you add all these other things together, maybe they're taking 2,000.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, cool. This is cool. I know I'm going to use this for my clients. So.
Yeah, great.
Thank you.
Everybody else, like, does this look interesting? If you, yeah. I got this idea from somebody. Oh, wait. Let me go in and clear it out before I leave this here. And somebody's going, what? That's not what I have. Okay, that. Ah, come here. Just, I think we set it up so that you can't edit the column with the formula in it. You can only add here. So you can add to all these columns, the stuff below the pink, but you're not going to be able to add to anything in that total. I think that's what Frances said she set it up as, so that it wouldn't. But I got this idea and I was like, well, how am I going to do this? Because if they're all going to be added up, how many do I know? And I'm going to put it at the end. And so I gave it to one of our brilliant people on our team. And I said, I want this, but I'm not sure. How do you have any ideas? And she said, put it at the beginning. I'm like, duh. Like, oh, I could put it at the beginning. And then it doesn't matter if I have 50 or 100 supplements. It'll add them all up. And it just has formulas across. So I'm excited by it because I think it just is really helpful. Because so many times we end up having people taking too much or not enough of certain nutrients. And then we can adjust it. So if this person has high red blood cell magnesium, see if it's just as simple as she's taking too much and then lower her dose. And if she's not taking too much, then we're going to look at, okay, what's happening? Why would she have that much magnesium? I mean, most people don't eat enough magnesium rich foods to end up with high red blood cell magnesium, and what kind of other interfering factors might be going on there. Yeah, Martha says it actually helps for a person to see that maybe they're taking low quality vitamins or they're taking too high a potency. Like, you know, a lot of these Bs are super high potency and then they may be taking a multi along with it. And then they may be taking, so you can get into imbalances between them. And when you get to the micronutrients module, you're going to see all of that in there, like which nutrients interfere with which. So our next spreadsheet that someone's going to help me with, is the spreadsheet where we actually do across the top and down the side all of the nutrients. And then we're going to put X's, like an up arrow or a down arrow, if they enhance absorption of each other or if they interfere with each other. And that way we can help people to know, don't take your, like I said earlier, don't take iodine with vitamin C because they'll interfere with each other. Make sense? Cool. Anything else? Ancient minerals for a topical magnesium. And sometimes that works and sometimes, and most of the time it does some sort of topical, but a lot of times, especially people with low stomach acid and all, but sometimes people, for whatever reason, their skin isn't going to absorb it, right? Or you can't get enough through the skin to really replenish. So everybody's individual, right? That's the bottom line is everybody's individual. There's no one size fits all. And we just have to work with each case on a case by case basis. Make sense? Any other questions? Ava says, this call is so interesting to listen to. Thanks. You're welcome. And what you'll find, you know, as you're new, those of you who have been around for a while, you can attest to this. The first few calls you're on and you're going, I don't know that. That's okay, right? Because it's just going to sink into your subconscious. And you're going to go, when you finally get to it, you go, oh, yeah, I know that. So cool, right? All right, so we're going to go. If you guys want to open up your cameras and wave, we can say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye, everybody. So great to see you all.
Night, everybody.
To see all of you. Yay. Thank you for being here. And big welcome again to all of you. This is your first call with us. So big welcome. And we'll talk to you again. Bye.
All right.